So I can just click on this, click record when I'm ready.
I'll just start it again, but.
That's technology. He's very confused.
Tracy should be coming in here any second.
Okay. We are also going to have the founder of United Animal Nations, which is what we used to be called. His son, Belton Morris Jr., is joining our board, and he does donor advised funds. He wrote one of the articles in our scoop. He's also going to be joining us, just kind of like listening, but in case anyone has any questions from a donor perspective.
Right. Okay. So it's you and Nicole actually in the office right now, just the two of you, or are there more people? Or?
And then and Belton is here too.
And Belton too, okay. Yeah, all three, all right, in that. Gotcha.
I'm going to pull up the agenda real quick too, so I have that in front of me. You didn't have any problems logging in or anything. You were good.
Yeah, it asked for participant ID, and it says if you don't have one, just hold on or just don't press anything. So,
pound.
Yeah, hit pound. So it should be easy.
Could be.
Yeah, we actually use Zoom. I think we have a new one now, but Zoom is the main one we use for our group. So.
Zach, how do I get back to Zoom?
Minimize whatever you're on.
I can't. It doesn't give me the yellow bar. Should I do the green?
Just make it smaller. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So we have, I think this might, is Tracy from Sacramento?
I think you're drinking wine.
You didn't get to meet Belton.
Nice to meet you. So,
Belton
will be joining the board. Zach. Belton will be on the board in January.
Oh,
cool.
Belton will
be on the board in January.
Oh, cool.
Right, they're fine. We're
going to
all be
I'm
getting
actually,
close.
I'm going to leave in a minute. So if you
want to
scoot this way.
I'm having him in here so in case any technical issues. Okay. But so are we using the, no, we couldn't get to work. Okay.
Oh, we're just using the phone.
Yes,
right, easier. Anyway, so good. Okay. Did you write the agenda?
I didn't print it. Okay, sorry.
We've got Evan and Tracy on.
Evan is on.
Hi, Evan.
Nicole, how you doing?
Good, how Nicole,
are you?
This is Tracy. I'm also here.
Oh, Tracy's there too. Tracy, how you doing?
Good.
Hi, Tracy. So Hello, Evan and Nicole. Tracy, I just wanted to also let you know, in addition to Aaron and myself being in the room, Belton Morris Jr. is also here, and he's going to be joining our board in January. He's also the son of the founder of the organization, so it's kind of cool, and has done donor-advised funds before, so it'd be great to just, you know, we're just going to introduce him to so that donors have specific questions about kind of his experience, whether it's like why he chose Red Rover or why animals or just the ease of which, you know, he's found the different vehicles. So just wanted to make sure you knew he was here. And
yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Okay. No, you already said that. Sorry. I didn't want to nod.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Okay. We're going to start now. We want to wait a couple minutes. I think maybe give maybe a minute or two for another couple of the ones to join. We have, if there anyone's on the call now and you'd like to introduce yourself, feel free to do that. We have a couple minutes.
Hi, it's Pam Panzerino.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
Does anyone else want to just say hi in your name? Well, then we can connect you to your phone number.
This is Dixie Dixon in Florida.
Hi, Dixie. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Lucinda in Long Beach.
Hi, Lucinda.
Hey.
What's the weather like now in Long Beach?
I think it's mid-90s.
Oh, that's warm.
It's warm in on the dry side. Yeah.
Anyone else like to introduce themselves?
This is Stephanie in Albuquerque.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. We've got two more people with phone numbers but no names. If you introduce yourselves, you can. If not, no big deal.
Mary Barber from Legacy Law Group, Tracy Potts' office.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Nice for you to join us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, we can go ahead and get started.
We have 1201.
Yeah, and everyone can kind of drop in as they connect.
Yeah, so this is, so I'm Nicole Forsythe. Hopefully you get to recognize my voice if you've got questions. I'm really grateful that you've all joined us. We're really excited that so many people are interested in finding out more information. We're going to kind of go through all of the different planned gifts that Red Rover accepts. So Evan Matthew and Tracy Potts are going to be explaining, they're going to introduce themselves and kind of give you a background about the different kinds of planned gifts that you might be interested in, and then we'll have some time for you to ask any questions, especially if you've been thinking about a specific one and you just don't really know how to get started. I also am really excited that we have a guest in the office with us today. That's Belton Morris Jr., and Belton Morris Jr. is actually the son of the founder of the organization, so it's pretty nice to have him here. He is going to be joining our board in January, and he also has done a lot of these different charitable gift vehicles. So he's done a donor advised fund and has done some other things. So if people have specific questions, you know, for a donor who has done these kinds of gifts for Red Rover specifically and other charities, he is also here to answer questions. So we're really excited to have you here, Belton.
Yep. Thanks. We're very happy and welcome everybody.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Evan and Tracy at this time to kind of give an overview of the different gifts. If you are online at all, we do have a web page that has kind of an overview of these as well. So that is redrover.org/legacy/legacy. So you can also look on our website and review these as well. So Evan and Tracy, welcome and take it away.
Well, it's good to be here, Nicole, Aaron, thank you, and great to hear you, Belton. I'll just give an introduction of myself, and then Tracy will introduce herself, and then she'll get into the first benefit, and after that, I will speak briefly, then she'll continue with some more summaries of the benefits in terms of how to give. So for me, I've been in the industry for about almost 20 years, and with the BCJ Financial Group that we've had, that's been for about 12 years. And one of the areas that I like to work in quite a bit is in the area of charitable giving or charitable planning, working both with individuals and as well as nonprofits. There's a couple areas in addition to that that I like to work in, but when it comes to charitable giving, that's usually at the top of the list because it's helping people to give and it benefits many different parties. So I'm very glad to be on the call. So Tracy?
So my name is Tracy Potts. I'm an estate planning attorney. I have a firm by the name of Legacy Law Group. I've been practicing for 29 years. I don't admit that very often, but I have. And I'm a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. I'm a former chair of the trust and estate section for the State Bar of California, and I am a fellow with a national organization called the American College of Trust and Estate Counsel. And so I'm going to talk to you today about some of the different types of gifts. Feel free to ask any questions as we go along and talk to you about the different kinds of things that come about and what we, you know, different ways. And fortunately for all of you that are interested in giving to Red Rover, they have lots of different options for the ways to give to them. And so we're going to go through those and what the benefits of different ones are. So with that, would you guys let me get started? Okay, so first I wanted to talk about direct gifts. And I like to talk about that first just mainly because it's what we normally do. So we write a check out of our checking account and we pay it to the organization that we like. Those are really gifts that we can do that are easy. If we've got the cash flow to do those, we can actually do them at any time. We just put those as a charitable gift on our tax return, assuming that we qualify for itemized deductions that year. And it's just a mechanism, and it's something we can do any time during our lifetime. It doesn't have to be cash. It can kind of be stock. It can be other types of assets. But those are the ones that most of us know about and have the direct benefit in that potential tax year on our tax return. The ones that are more planned giving are basically the gifts that we're going to be doing at the time of death. And the most common of those type of gifts are basically where we're going to be doing a devise in our will or trust. Now, some people call that a bequest. California changed that to call everything a devise. Back in the old English days, bequests were gifts of personal property and devises were gifts of real property. But we've actually changed that to be devise for everything. So basically, you can give whatever you would like to charitable organizations at the time of your death. And if you're doing a trust, you're going to basically give that gift in your trust agreement. If you're only doing a will, you'd put the gift in your will. But basically, you're giving a specific direction for the charity to receive a percentage of your assets, a specific dollar amount of your assets, a specific stock of your assets. But by doing those specific gifts, you get a couple of different benefits from that. So you're going to get the estate tax deduction. So currently, estate taxes are $11,400,000, but your assets will actually get that deduction, and it'll reduce the actual taxable amount of your estate. So if you were over the taxable amount, it would basically reduce that, and you get a dollar-for-dollar deduction for every charitable gift that you do make at the time of your death. Now, that's not as important right now because the exemption is so high, but as that exemption potentially might fall, that'll become more and more important to people. And so that's, and it really allows you to give a gift that you might not have been able to give during your lifetime because you didn't necessarily have the cash flow to give that. The next area is where a lot of people give gifts are in the life insurance annuity area. So for the life insurance annuity area, and I'm not talking about charitable annuities. I'm talking about life insurance products that are annuities. You can actually name a charity as a beneficiary designation on your either one of those types of products. So you can decide that you're the beneficiary designation on your life insurance. You can name charity directly as a beneficiary of that. You can give them a percentage. You can give a dollar amount. You can do the same thing with the annuity. Now, again, a beneficiary of a life insurance policy and a beneficiary of an annuity policy, those actually get deductions after the time of your death. And again, it's a charitable deduction on your estate tax return for transfer tax purposes. And then the extra benefit that you get in naming a charity on an annuity for your income tax purposes is that it also eliminates the income tax consequences on the annuity. So there's a couple of different things on annuities at the time of death, not charitable gift annuities, but on regular annuities. Most everything gets an adjustment in basis to fair market value when you pass away. Annuities are one of those products that actually does not get that adjustment. So they're a very good area to name a charity as the beneficiary, because otherwise any beneficiary that's going to receive that annuity is going to be paying the income tax consequence on the gain between what you purchased it for and what it ultimately distributes for. So a portion of that will remain taxable other if you give it to beneficiaries other than a charity. And then we have retirement accounts. And basically, retirement accounts are a very good place for people to do charitable giving. Basically, there's retirement accounts that are individual retirement accounts. There's also pension accounts. And the retirement accounts, they basically have also included within them taxable income. So it's another thing when you include retirement accounts, when you make beneficiaries to anyone, including yourself, anyone that receives money from a tax retirement account is going to pay income tax on each of the proceeds that are received. So during your lifetime, when you start taking your retirement accounts, you pay the income tax because they're tax-deferred assets. And if you leave it to someone at your death, again, that person is going to also pay the income tax. But you can actually transfer that taxable income and death to a charity. And then the charity, by being qualified as a charity, will not recognize the income on that retirement account. So basically, it will give you the ability to move taxable income to a charitable organization, whereas you could pick other assets that you potentially give to family so that you could eliminate the taxable income that they might incur. And then you also have that you're going to get the deduction on your estate tax return. So again, no matter which vehicle you use, anytime you're giving to a charity at the time of death, you're going to have a reduction in your taxable estate because you're going to get a dollar for dollar deduction for all of those charitable gifts. So do I have any questions so far? Okay, so I will just keep going then. The other area that I want to talk to you guys about is other types of charitable giving. Now, when we talk about these, we're going to talk about a couple of different ones. We're going to talk about charitable trusts, and we're also going to talk about charitable gift annuities, and then I want to talk about donor-advised funds. So basically, each of these are ways to give. Now, anytime you give with one of these, the one thing that I want to make clear is that if you've given a pledge to the organization for a gift, so you're going to do a planned gift and you've signed a pledge agreement, none of the tools that I'm talking about can you use to actually satisfy your pledge. So if you want to give a gift that's going to satisfy a pledge that you've assigned, you're going to do that with the other gifts that we've already talked about. You're going to give a specific gift in your will or your trust. You're going to make direct gifts to honor your pledge. But unless you actually have something else, another type of agreement, you can't use a charitable trust to honor a personal gift And you also can't use a charitable gift annuity to honor a personal gift. So if you want to do a pledge and use one of these other vehicles, you have to actually have that vehicle actually sign the pledge versus you personally. Everybody get that? Okay. Questions? All right. So let's talk about charitable gift annuities. So charitable gift annuities are basically a mechanism where you buy an annuity similar to a insurance product annuity, only it's for the purpose of giving the remainder of the annuity to charity. So you purchase the annuity, you get a deduction for the purchase of the annuity based upon a calculation of how much it was the charity is expected to receive at the time of your death. You have where you, as the donor, you receive an income stream from the charitable gift annuity. And then the charity itself receives the remainder balance that is in the annuity at the time of your death. Now, there are lots of ways to do charitable gift annuities. And Red Rover is actually set up. They don't do charitable gift annuities directly, but they are set up to accept charitable gift annuities that they're using a third-party vendor to do that. And so basically, the third-party vendor, which is it's basically CGA, which is the Council on Gift Annuities, that vendor then basically sells you a contract. They enter into an agreement with Red Rover, and that they monitor it, they manage the asset, they provide the income stream, and then they make sure that the gift pays out. And there's other third-party vendors that are out there that you can also use. The only thing that you always have to make sure is that that third-party vendor will sign the contract with Red Rover to make sure that that charitable gift is going to ultimately pass to Red Rover. Those can be great avenues where you have a gift that you want to give to the charity, but you really are looking for an income stream during lifetime. And it gives you an immediate deduction when you actually purchase the charitable gift annuity on your income tax return, as long as you're itemizing in that year. And then so the next area are charitable gifts through trusts. And there's a couple of different trusts, but the one I'm going to talk about is the Charitable Remainder Trust. If you guys have questions about other types of charitable trusts, just let me know. But Charitable Remainder Trusts are basically a mechanism where you set up a trust, you make it irrevocable, and then you donate property to that specific trust. That trust, again, when you make the donation, if the irrevocable donation into the trust, there is a calculation to determine the value of that gift for the purposes of tax deductions. That takes that asset that you actually have given into the remainder trust, and it takes it completely out of your taxable estate. And so at your death, whatever's remaining in the charitable remainder trust will not be taxed. And what it does is you basically transfer an asset, usually a highly appreciated asset, such as stock, a piece of real estate, a commercial building, you know, anything that actually is appreciated. It then allows you to, this asset is then sold in that trust. The trust then has a trustee that you've named that manages that asset. It calculates a payment to you on an annual basis, and sometimes the payment is calculated on what we call a unit trust basis, and sometimes calculated on an annuity basis. So if it's a unit trust basis, it's calculating based upon the fair market value of the trust every year, and people that want to make sure they have increasing payments for over their lifetime usually pick the unit trust version. The other way is to go with an annuity trust, which basically calculates, you select what you want your annuitized amount to be every year, and it pays you the same amount over your lifetime for all of the different years. So basically, it's a way for you to make the charitable donation, because it'll ultimately go to charity, but it provides you an income stream on that asset. So this helps people a lot of times that become where they have assets with significant gain in them that they're looking to get an income stream off of that asset without taking an immediate hit for the income tax consequence of selling that asset. So you get that deduction at the time that you donate property is sold. Then over your lifetime, as you're getting paid out the remainder interest, you will recognize the gain that that asset had over the time that the installment payments are made to you, but only in the amount of the installments. So it allows you to stretch the gain over many, many years, and it reduces your income tax consequence significantly. So that's what charitable remainder trusts are, and it's basically a mechanism for you to get that benefit in addition to giving a great benefit to the charity at the end of your lifetime. And then a charitable remainder trust can be set up for just your lifetime, or it can be set up for multiple lifetimes. It doesn't have to just be for you. But they always have to be set up in a safe harbor that there is going to be something left over for the charity. So you can't take such a big payment out of it that you would completely eliminate the charitable gift, which you wouldn't want to do that anyway, because you want to get that charitable deduction when you donate the property. So that was a lot of information in a very short period of time. Does anybody have questions about charitable remainder trust? Okay. All right. So let's talk about donor-advised funds. So donor-advised funds have been around, but it's mainly just recently that a lot of people have talked about donor-advised funds, because when the 2018 income tax change occurred, donor-advised funds were seen as a mechanism to help you with your income tax charitable deductions. And so donor-advised funds have to basically be placed with a public charity account. Many public charity accounts exist to do this. Most of the time, most of the brokerage firms have set up public charities that are related to those firms where the donor-advised funds can be managed. And basically what you are permitted to do is that you give money to the donor-advised fund. It's managed in the donor-advised fund. And then you have the opportunity to direct gifts out of that donor advised fund to a charity of your choice, so that you as the donor are giving the money away. You give it away completely and no longer have any ownership over it in the year that you transfer it to the donor advised fund. But you do have the ability to have the donor advised fund paying money directly to the charity. Now, the reason that people have started doing donor advised funds versus doing specific gifts of this is that they are looking to stack their charitable donations generally in 1 year versus having it paid over several years. So, for example, you gave $10,000 per year to Red Rover, and Red Rover then had become kind of your annual gift. And then when the 2018 tax year occurred, you no longer qualified for itemized deductions if you only gave $10,000 in 1 year. But that is still the amount that you want to give each year. And so you can instead, if you gave $20,000 in 1 year, you would be able to deduct that as an itemized deduction, but yet you really wanted to make sure that the charity didn't have the swings of the ups and downs each year with your giving, and you wanted to keep their amounts at $10,000 per year. What you could do is you could use the donor advised fund. You could give the $20,000 to the donor advised fund. You could direct $10,000 of it to be paid over this year and next year, and then you could do the same thing 2 years from now. And that would allow you to get your itemized deductions every other year, and use the standard deductions on the years that you couldn't get that deduction. And so the charity would continue to receive the benefit of your annual gift, and you would get the benefit of the charitable deduction. So those are kind of my thoughts on the why a lot of people have moved closer to using the donor advised funds. But I'm sure our board member has some more comments on that as well, that because since he's used those as well. So those are my thoughts on some of the different charitable availability that Red Rover offers to you guys and that you can do. Evan, Nicole, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, go ahead.
Not specifically. I would just open up to, you know, if people have specific questions, if they've been thinking about doing a specific type of planned gift and they want to know more information. Everyone can definitely follow up with myself or Aaron as well, but I definitely wanted to make sure they could pick your brains if they have specific questions. Also ask Belton any questions about what his experience has been.
Yeah, and also we do have material if anybody's interested and would like. We certainly can provide you with some additional material that you could have that just kind of has gone over the similar things that I've just talked about. So if you want that, if you'll just follow up with Aaron and Nicole, we'll be glad to give you that information. Evan, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
No. Nicole, go ahead. I think.
Oh, I was just going to also say, you know, from my experience talking to, you know, donors who are interested in this, a lot of the questions sort of pertain to people's individual circumstances, you know, so mm-hmm. It's really hard to advise everybody, of course. So talking to, you know, someone like you, Tracy, you know, an estate planning attorney mm-hmm. is a really good way to just kind of work through your own personal situation, because if you have mm-hmm. You know, children or loved ones that you want to give money to in addition to charities, you know, every vehicle has its own benefits as you are going through. And you know, everyone has different situations. They may have the really high value assets. They may have a higher need for the income stream, you know, to keep coming in their lifetime. So there's so many individual differences. But we'd be right. happy to answer questions if people have them.
I have a kind of general question.
Sure.
This is Dixie Dixon. I was wondering how often it happens that someone comes to an estate planning attorney without any idea of what charity it is they want to give to. They don't have children, let's say. They don't have an extended family, and they want to give money to charity, but they're sort of floundering around. Maybe they've got an idea, that they'd like it to be for animals. How often does it happen that the attorney is actually able to point them to a particular charity? And do you have restrictions on that as an attorney? Do you have to, is it okay to say, well, I have a pamphlet here from Red Rover. Maybe you'd like to take a look at that and consider them.
So
does that
generally, yes, Dixie, it does. This is Tracy. So it does. There are people that come in and they have different, you know, they want to do, they are charitably inclined. They want to do charitable giving, but they're struggling with the charities that they would like to pick. So generally in those circumstances, what we do is we try to talk to them about the what types of things that are important in their lives, what types of things that organizations that have been important to them in their past. We send them material over potential charities that they're interested in. And we really just work through that individually with them as to what charities they ultimately select. The only limitations that I have is that I always tell the potential donor if there's charities that I've been involved with to make it clear that it's not, I'm not telling them that that's a charity they necessarily want to go with, that that there is a potential that I have a conflict of interest and that I've served on that board or that I've been involved in that charity. But it doesn't prevent the donor from ultimately deciding that's the charity they want to go with. But it really is an individual decision. But lawyers often are helping with giving like different charitable names or different, but based upon what the passions of the person, the particular donor are. So they're really trying to help explore with you what the donor would like to see accomplished in what area of the country geographically and all of those types of questions to try to narrow down potential charities that they would be interested in. And then give the donor the homework to figure out which charity is the one that they would like to be involved with.
You spoke, or someone spoke about the charity being set up to accept a particular kind of gift.
Yes, that's a charitable gift annuity.
If you have a small charity that is fairly unsophisticated, and yet there's a sophisticated donor. How do you adjust for that situation?
Well, in most of those situations is that third-party vendors are going to be able to provide those charitable gift annuities. And as long as the charity has enough expertise to be able to monitor that annuity and to sign the contract for that annuity with the third-party vendor, the charity can still accept that gift. But they do have to have enough expertise where they can confirm that the gift is in compliance and that it's being completely, it's being managed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, great. Does anybody else have any questions?
Hi, my name's Kim. I have a question.
Sure.
I run a rescue. I have 8 dogs and a cat currently. And I'd like to leave, I guess, my house to whomever will take care of my pets after I'm gone. How do I go about setting that up?
That's a good question, and actually that was the next topic that I was going to talk about.
Okay.
So if you guys want, I'll just let me check to see before I move into that topic. Is there any other questions on some of these charitable giving types of gifts? Okay. So I don't hear any. Yes.
Tracy, Before we go on, I'd also, if Belton wants to kind of talk a little bit about the different types of vehicles you've used and which one you found to be the most helpful for your situation, that might be interesting.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tracy, first of all, great job. I'm listening. I'm never surprised at how much I think I know. And then I, someone like you comes in and such a nice, comprehensive outlook to everything. I've been in my long-term field I've been in has been the real estate investment world, and kind of at the end, kind of semi-retiring now. So my CPA had first, we were actually looking at share of a remainder trust. That was going to be one way I could dispose of properties, get some write-off, and help start setting that up into charities through my estate planning. So, but the donor advice fund worked out, and it may not work for everybody, but for me, I had a couple properties I was able to donate to the DAF, and of course, that's the third party that came into play. That was, we have a great community foundation here in Sacramento. And the nice thing about the donor advice fund for me was, you know, once the house was donated, they sold it, the cash goes into my donor fund, and then I'm able to direct as often as I want grants to charities. And I'm a, you know, very avid animal lover, and of course, Red Rover's the highest on my list. So I wanted to make sure that they could, exactly what you said, Tracy, was receive a steady contribution from me for my plan at least every year. But I'm also able to other charities that come up. You know, sometimes you hear of a new one that you really, you know, maybe it's a smaller one and you really want to help them out. What's nice is I'm still alive and I can able to direct these little charitable gifts while I'm still alive. I get to see where my money is going to, and not that I'm going to directly, you know, be involved in that, but I, you know, direct it to worthy animal groups and things that I felt I wanted to see as I'm, again, still alive. And there's nothing wrong with I have bequests going when I pass, and we're just setting up some charitable remainder trusts also. So the nice thing, and you've explained it so well, there's many vehicles of ways to do this. So I guess other donors out there, I think there's, you've put some really nice examples of different ways to go. So anyway, that's what worked for me, was that the donor advice fund was something. And the second part of that is, I also got an immediate tax write-off for the entire property that I donated, where as a CRTs, it's kind of stretched out, as you said, Tracy. So that worked out really well for some of the properties I've accumulated that I'd paid off that had higher tax bases also. So that was a double win that I could do both of those things.
Great. Thanks, Belton. Any other questions before you launch into the how you can include pets in, or any animals, as you're saying, if you have a rescue, how you might be able to set up pets in estate planning? Okay, it sounds like we're ready, Tracy.
Okay. So one thing that I want to make clear to everybody is, I'm sure you all know this, but they've made it very clear in the law that you can never leave money directly to your pet. And so leaving money directly to your pet is still void in all jurisdictions in the United States. But you can do lots of things to make sure that your pet is taken care of. And there are lots of different things that you can do, and I can even tell you some of the things I have specifically done. So you can actually, the least restrictive and the, you know, you're just taking a gamble on, is that you just basically name somebody that's going to be in charge of your estate plan, and you expect that person will just handle making sure your pets go to good homes or that they're taken care of. Some people still do that. They think the person that they name will absolutely take care of the pet. But other people want to put specific language in their documents to make sure, no matter what, that all of their pets are taken care of. So some people do a specific gift to a specific person that they name will actually receive the pets, and they'll be paid a specific dollar amount that they will get in order to take care of the pets. Some people just give the pets to a specific person. But other people set up what's called a trust for a person in exchange for the care of the pet. And sometimes these are done in specific trusts that are called pet trusts, and sometimes these are done in people's revocable trust. Now I'm going to give you an example of before pet trusts were the law in California. We did trusts that were already established for the benefit of the pet, but we actually had to make them trust for the benefit of a person. So basically, an example I had was that I had a person that was really wanted to make sure that their pets were cared for the remainders of their lives, and they never had to move from their home. And so in that instance, what we did was we set up a trust. We named a specific individual to be in charge of receiving an income stream. They also got a right of occupancy in the home. And the condition that we required was that they got those things as long as the pets were being maintained and cared for in the home. Now, in that instance, we had a different trustee, and in this instance that we did that, it was actually for cats. There were three cats, and we had a person move into the home. They received income to live in the home. The house was completely maintained by the trust. The only thing that we had to do that had not been done before the death of the settlor, the person who created the trust, was that the cats had not been chipped. And so we didn't get into a situation where we had a 50-year-old cat, which I'm being facetious, but anyway, we went in, we identified each of the cats, and then on a random basis, we would identify that each of the cats were being cared for properly and that they still existed and that they were getting the proper vet treatment. And so that was a way that we used to do it before pet trusts were necessarily invented. And you can still do those types of transactions in your regular trust. But in California, we also passed the legislation that was Probate Code Section 15212 that allows that you can now have a trust that is specifically set up for the care of a domestic or a pet animal or animals, and that then trust will then terminate at the death of the last animal. And there's a couple of restrictions in that trust. One, the animal has to have existed at the time of the death of the settlor, the person that creates it. It can be multiple animals. There's no actual definition of a domestic or a pet animal. People have assumed, though, that means that you can't put a tiger or a lion or something that is more of a wild animal in the trust, that it has to be something that you keep as a pet. And so basically you can put in there, a lot of people have used these where they will name a charity like Red Rover as the beneficiary after the death of the pet. They can do an agreement with the charity that they'll check on the welfare of the pet to be the remainder beneficiary of the pet. There can be a trustee that you establish specifically that's maintaining the welfare of the pet. But basically, in setting up these trusts, you want to make sure that you've put safeguards in place, that the welfare of the pet is always being checked and confirmed, and that there is someone that has an interest in making sure the pets are well cared for. So those are kind of our options for providing for the pets. Questions about that? And did I answer the question that I had earlier about caring for the pet?
Yeah, I just guess I need to find an attorney to do the paperwork.
Yes, and so, and you can decide, you can work with that attorney as to what best what matches your needs, as to whether it needs to be a separate, self-standing trust, or whether it's a sub-trust within your regular trust. Because it can be okay. Either way.
All right, great, thanks.
You're very welcome. Are there any other questions about providing for a pet?
Suppose you are giving the pets to the charity, if it's the type of animal charity that has a shelter,
mm-hmm.
And you need to estimate how long they're going to live and how large the gift should be, if they're going to be housed by the charity for their lifetime. Have you done any of those?
Yes, I have, actually, and basically what we've done is we've, in most of those instances, what we've come up with is a estimate of what the annual cost of the pet is, or if the pet, we think that their annual cost will go up, we've calculated basically what a specific gift would be, and then we give the pets and the specific gift to the charity with the understanding that the charity will continue to care for the pet until the end of the, for the rest, remainder of the life of the pet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in those instances, we want to make sure that the charity is going to accept that. So we've had made sure that the donor's been in communication with the charity that that is an acceptable gift.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to review that every so often to make sure that it still makes sense.
Right.
Because we may be calculating on a new pet's life that we didn't include in our original equation. And I never, just so you know, I never identify the pet by name generally because it, I usually just have it be that your current pets at the time of your death versus it being a specific pet because pets unfortunately don't have the life expectancies that humans do at this point. And so based upon that, we often have multiple pets over our lifetimes. And so we don't want to make it where we only provide for Molly and we forgot to provide for the new pet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important that you, when you're looking at doing your planning for your pets, that you're covering all living pets at the time of your death and not just that current pet that you had when you drafted mm-hmm. that plan.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So does anybody else have questions about pets? Okay, well, basically, I appreciate all of you giving me time, and I will let Nicole and Evan wrap things up.
Mm-hmm. Evan, did you want to say anything else before we kind of do?
Actually, I'll just add one other thing I was going to touch on. It really has to focus on the beneficiary of a life insurance policy. I know Tracy was talking about it earlier. And there's a lot of ways to have insurance be part of the charitable planning process. But really, as she said, changing the beneficiary is probably the simplest way to utilize that to help make those donations. And all you really need to do if you have an interest in that is either get a new policy or even better yet, if you already have one and you're not using it and the need isn't there, anymore for whatever the original purpose was, then all you got to do is call that insurance company, whoever that carrier is, get the form to change the beneficiary. It's usually like a couple pages, fill it out and change it. And you can either make Red Rover the primary or contingent, whatever the estate planning goals are. And then usually in about a week or two, they'll send you a confirmation statement that it's been changed. And it really is that easy. There's no income tax deduction for that because you're retaining ownership of the policy. But the point is, when you're naming Red Rover as the beneficiary, you're potentially providing a larger gift by creating a legacy with those death benefit proceeds, all because of using your policy. And like I said, sometimes if somebody has an existing policy, it's just that much easier because you don't, the original need isn't there anymore. So why wouldn't I want to give it to Red Rover and have a win-win there? So I just wanted to add that point. It's really simple to change beneficiaries on policies. So that's all I have.
Thanks, Evan. It's so helpful to kind of get, you know, go through the real nuts and bolts of how people actually do that, because I do think sounds overwhelming when it's really just changing a form. So that's a great way to. Does anyone else have any other questions about, you know, how Red Rover can help, or even sort of, you know, where Red Rover is heading? We can also use this time if you've got questions about our program work. And if not, we can kind of tell you how to get in touch with us.
Well, does Red Rover use pledges?
That
was brought up earlier, and I'd never really seen a pledge.
We have not in the history, you know, up till now. There could be a time in the future where we do that if we had some kind of a capital campaign or, you know, some really big project where we were actually going out and asking for pledges. But no, we typically don't do them. The closest we would do would be a matching. Sometimes we do a matching gift campaign. And so we will get kind of pledges for people to contribute to a pool of gifts that become the kind of matched gift amount, if that makes sense. So we have done it, but not quite in the same formal sense that Tracy brought up. Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I guess sometimes there are people who are making a gift to Red Rover, but you don't really know who they are. Depending on the type of gift they're making, they may not have contacted you and even told you.
That's a great, Yeah, we are so surprised sometimes when we get gifts.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Yeah, a lot of people we know about because we do send, you know, we have lots of communication with the people who give regular annual gifts, but sometimes they are, you know, again, they don't have a lot of cash in their lifetime, so they may just be giving $15 a year, but then they have become legacy partners. So it's really wonderful when we find out someone has put us in their will or estate plan because it helps us with our budgeting and planning. So we call those people legacy partners, and that just indicates that, you know, there is some kind of planned gift that they have either let us know about or not. Sometimes we don't know the details of the gift. But we are so grateful and so, you know, we've attracted so many donors who like that concept of being able to give a planned gift that we budget a substantial amount of income every year knowing that those are going to come in. So we are just incredibly grateful for people, you know, like people on this call who think about that ahead of time and may not have the money to give in their lifetime, but really want to make sure they've set something up for their causes that they really are passionate about. So we are just like just incredibly grateful for people who do that, as well as all the
so
other gifts we've been talking about.
How much certainty do you need in order to actually put it in your budget? Something in writing or just the donor has just mentioned it? Or
And Aaron could probably give the details of kind of what kind of notifications we get. We rarely get copies of anything. Like we don't get, you know, copies of beneficiary forms or wills necessarily. Usually people have just told us that we are in their plan of some kind. Sometimes we get the value. Sometimes we find out from an attorney that we've been stated in something that's going to happen in the next year. So a lot of our budgeting comes from notifications we get from an attorney saying, hey, in the next year, you may be looking at a very substantial gift through a bequest or, you know, through an estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
But Erin, do you want to add any kind of notifications we get?
Sure. So when people notify us they have included a Red Rover in their estate plans, we'll send a welcome letter with a little form. It's completely optional and confidential that just invites you to share how and when and how much and just kind of share a little bit more of how you've left us in your estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's unpredictable. So we keep those on file just to kind of the way to more to recognize you in your lifetime and thank you. And like Nicole mentioned, we'll get letters sometimes from attorneys when someone has passed saying that, you know, within the next year we anticipate this. But we are able to budget every year just based on history. We try and base it on the very minimum that we get every year, and we have gotten it every year in my 12-year history here. So,
yeah,
we usually get more, significantly more than we budget.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're pretty conservative. So we estimate, you know, with our budget size, which is around the $4 million, $4 million budget, we budget for about $300,000 a year in planned gifts. And so sometimes we get close to that. Other times we get over $1 million. And then if we have excess of what we need for that particular current budget year, we have a reserve. So we have a reserve where we have an investment manager who manages our reserve for us so we can get income off of that reserve as well. So for us, it serves as kind of a quasi-endowment. We don't have an official endowment where we have a policy that dictates what we can spend from that pool of money, but it's so successful that we generate about $100,000, you know, between $80,000 and $100,000 every year on investment income alone. So that investment income does a huge amount of support for all of our programs and also allows us to take risks and, you know, do something that we may not be able to do normally. You know, it might be an emergency response that we weren't anticipating or, you know, some big expenditure, which we know is going to really go to the animals and help them. So we can go off budget sometimes, which is, again, we're so grateful for these bequests and planned gifts because they feed right into our reserve and right into our flexibility so that we can be there when animals and people are in crisis. So pretty incredible things that you guys are doing by wanting to contribute to charities.
Do you make an effort to identify wealthy individuals to promote Red Rover to? People who, you've never even heard of, but...
Yeah. Not necessarily, because, you know, most of the giving in the United States is actually not necessarily the people who have the most money. When you look at the total amount of giving, there's more from people who are just kind of middle income, and it just all mm-hmm. contributes and adds together. So we don't necessarily go out and do research based on wealth. We have done some research on our donors, existing donors that we have that we think maybe we want to build a relationship with and find out, you know, what kind of assets they might have so that when we have conversations with them, we know kind of what to expect. But, you know, mm-hmm. most of the money, the biggest amounts of money we've received are from people who were just, you know, they sell their house and the house was a modest home. But when you look at, you know, the housing prices and housing costs, if people own their house outright, that can be $500,000 easily, especially in California when the housing mm-hmm. is pretty expensive. So, you know, we don't necessarily target people who have a lot of money. We target people who have really big hearts.
Yeah, and actually, this is Tracy. I just wanted to add to that people that do charitable giving do it because they have charitable intent. The tax planning that we do for charitable giving, that's just a benefit that we add on. It's if somebody's doing charitable giving for the purposes of the tax benefit, they're usually not happy with doing charitable giving. It has to come from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of the time. So, you know, if we have any last minute questions, we will also encourage you, you know, to reach out directly to myself, Nicole, or Erin. And Erin has, I think, have you emailed everybody already?
Yeah, okay, everyone should have my email.
Yeah, everyone should have Erin's email. She can also connect you to me. You can also call the office, and that number is 916-429-2457. Almost forgot it.
And that's also in my email as well.
Yeah, so you can check the email. Feel free to call us, directly. My extension is 304 if you'd like to talk with me. I always love to kind of hear, you know, what inspires you to give, whether to Red Rover or just animals in general. I get the sense many of you probably do lots of stuff for animals, so thank you if you are doing something above and beyond just supporting Red Rover. I'm extremely grateful for what you're doing out there. So at that, we will bring the call to a close, but please reach out to us if you have any other questions or any ways we can help with any of your planned giving questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'll be in touch with Pam via email. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pam. Thank you, Pam. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome.